Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesETC.
Even in these tough times, there's still so much to celebrate this Christmas. A message of peace and brotherhood that continues to inspire more than 2,000 years after Jesus' birth.
I picture things as the opposite of the days of the Reformers. Back then, people were terrified of God and His judgment and of His wrath. Where today, it's God loves you anyway. He doesn't require payment for your sins. He just kind of forgets about them.
Saddleback does not need to be taught on generosity. This is the most generous church in the world. You gave $2.4 million, a world record. Isn't it great?
Woo-hoo! Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Well, there's no doubt that these documents, ancient in the extreme, some of the most valuable, not only in terms of their monetary value, that really can't, you can put a price tag on the Dead Sea Scrolls, but their scholarly value is also incalculable. We have in the Dead Sea Scrolls an amazing array of documents, including major sources of biblical manuscripts. And yet from their very discovery, they have been not only controversial, but they have been fought over. And of course, in the news, a continued battle between Israel and Jordan over the Dead Sea Scrolls. We're going to talk about that in the first half hour of Issues, etc. on this Wednesday, January the 6th, Epiphany Day. By the way, if you're keeping track, Dr. Nathan Jastrom will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Email us here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. In the second half hour of the program, Pastor Brent McGuire will join us. Harold Camping of radio fame has yet again set the date for Christ's return. Sometime in May of 2011, I believe. He's the president of Family Radio. His followers think he's got it right this time. He's done the math. We'll see what Brent McGuire has to say about that. Then in the second hour of the program, we'll talk about the season of Epiphany with Dr. Paul Grimm, and we'll spend some time with Brigitte Gabriel, author of the book, Because They Hate and They Must Be Stopped. We'll talk about President Obama's national security address yesterday, especially in light of the Christmas attempt at a bombing on Northwest Airlines. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our email address, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. We're going to talk about the battle between Israel and Jordan over the Dead Sea Scrolls in just a moment. Dr. Nathan Jastrom will join us. Before that, let's hear the story from Reuters.
The Dead Sea Scrolls attract hundreds of visitors. The pieces of parchment are said to be around 2,000 years old, documenting the lives of Jews and Christians during the time of Christ. Now the important historic documents have been thrown into the center of an ownership row. Jordan says the scrolls, some of which are on display in Canada, belong to them, a claim Israel rejects.
Simply ridiculous. I mean, there's no other word. First of all, these scrolls are clearly part and parcel of the Jewish historical and cultural heritage. What relation do they have to Jordan and to Jordanian history? What claim can they lay on the texts, on the scrolls, on their historical or religious meaning?
Maha al-Khatib is the country's tourism minister. She says Jordan asked for the scrolls not to be returned to Israel.
The world that it is not allowed that any cultural property should be transferred or owned due to armed forces. We actually sent many letters to UNESCO in this regard, and we urge the government of Canada, which is a government that respects UN resolutions, and we know that they will be very eager to make sure that these scrolls are basically returned back to Jordan, its owner.
Jordan said Israel seized the scrolls illegally during the 1967 war when Israel captured the West Bank and East Jerusalem from Jordan. But the controversy over the ownership of the pieces of parchment continues. Israeli law considers the country's antiquities authority to be the custodian of what is believed to be the oldest copies of the Hebrew Bible. Basma Fahim, Reuters.
Joining us to talk about this battle between Israel and Jordan over the Dead Sea Scrolls, who owns them, is the basic question. Dr. Nathan Jastrom, he's professor and chairman of the Department of Theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's published the first edition of the Book of Numbers of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Dr. Jastrom, welcome back.
It's nice to be with you again.
How important are these documents in terms of biblical scholarship?
They are the most important discovery of biblical documents that we've ever made. I guess that's the simplest way to put it. Up until they were discovered, we had very old manuscripts, but they were 1,000 years after these manuscripts. So to discover these manuscripts that came from 1,000 years earlier than the earliest ones we had known about before, just there's no way you can put a price on that type of value.
Do you have an opinion or a thought on the question that is raging in the news regarding Dead Sea Scrolls? Who owns them?
That's been a troubling question for quite a while. And it all depends on how you look at history. I mean, who owns the land of Israel? They're fighting about that even today. Depending on when you draw the lines about where what land belonged to which country, you have that territory in the Mideast or the Near East changing hands to many different countries. It went through the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Turks, the British, the modern Israelis and Palestinians. So it all depends on when you draw your lines and what map you look at as to where the site of the scrolls is. Currently, it's in the nation of Israel, but it's in the disputed West Bank area that the UN had partitioned off as belonging to the Palestinians. Nobody claims that that area belongs to the Jordanians now, even though the Jordan government did have control of that area of the West Bank during the time when there was a partition in force. So who owns that territory is kind of a question that they're fighting out in the world today. And then who owns the scrolls that came from that territory? Certainly the scrolls are about Jewish concerns. They're written by ancient Jews. They are not written by ancient Jordanians or Moabites or Ammonites or anything like that. So in terms of their content and what culture they are preserving, that would clearly fall on the side of the side of Israel rather than the side of Jordan.
When you know the average person like me hears Dead Sea Scrolls, I picture scrolls of parchment or something like that on a spindle, kind of neatly arranged. What are we talking about in terms of just the sheer volume of documents represented by what we call the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, they're roughly 1,000 documents, different documents, but they're tens of thousands of fragments. And the type of scroll that you're thinking of, neatly rolled on a spindle, we have a couple of those where the entire scroll is preserved. But we have many more examples of very small fragments, ones that are smaller than your hand, sometimes as small as a quarter, with just a few letters inscribed on them. So all these tens of thousands of fragments all together make up that entire collection of what we call the Dead Sea Scrolls. So what makes this story more than just interesting is the possible effects this type of claim will have on exhibiting these Dead Sea Scrolls around the world. As I understand it, some of the scrolls are on display in Canada right now, and the Jordanian government wants Canada to kind of forcibly repatriate the scrolls to Jordan, from their opinion. I would hate to see that type of danger sequestering the scrolls from being exhibited all around the world. The thought that maybe the governments where the scrolls are being exhibited would take it upon themselves to send them back to Jordan rather than sending them back to Israel, from which the great majority of the scrolls come from.
What are they made of?
Well, most of these scrolls, the vast majority, are made from animal skins, and they've analyzed some of those animal skins with DNA now, as well as through careful sight, and it looks like some of the animal skins come from sheep, some come from cows, and others come from gazelle that roam in that region. Those are the main sources of the animal skins. There are a few scrolls that are made on other materials. There's a wooden tablet, for instance. There are some broken pieces of pottery with writing on them. There's one scroll that the Jordanians have, which is a scroll written on copper. They pounded the letters into the copper and then rolled up the copper, and then the copper kind of rusted as copper rusts into a green color. And to read that scroll, they had to slice off hemispheres of the rolled copper because they couldn't just unroll it anymore. It would all crumble. And so they have these hemisphere sections of the copper scroll on display in the capital of Jordan.
When we come back from this break, we'll talk more about the battle between Israel and Jordan over the Dead Sea Scrolls and the scrolls themselves. They are obviously of great scholarly import, being the oldest manuscripts of the Hebrew Bible. We would say the Old Testament. How much of the Old Testament is included in the Dead Sea Scrolls? And are there other documents included in the Dead Sea Scrolls that are not of biblical sources? Dr. Nathan Jastrom is our guest. It's Wednesday, January the 6th. Our call-in number for questions and comments. We are coming to you live, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us with questions or comments on the Dead Sea Scrolls, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at @issuesetc. Dr. Nathan Jastrom is professor and chairman of the Department of Theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's published the first edition of the Book of Numbers of the Dead Sea Scrolls. That means he's actually laid eyes on at least the Book of Numbers from the Dead Sea Scrolls. We'll talk a little bit about that on the other side of the break. Coming up after about 10 minutes more with Dr. Nathan Jastrom, we'll talk with Pastor Brent McGuire about Harold Camping's recent prediction that Jesus is coming back on May 21st, the day after my birthday, 2011. At least I'll get my birthday in. We'll be right back. Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit the CLCC.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 6th. Dr. Nathan Jastrom is our guest. Dr. Jastrom, have you actually laid eyes on at least the section of the Dead Sea Scrolls that you published as part of scholarly work?
Yes, I have. I went to Jerusalem while I was working on my dissertation at Harvard University and looked at those fragments and also saw many of the other fragments. We would go into the room where they were kept and tell the curator of the museum which file cabinet drawers we'd like have opened. And there the Dead Sea Scrolls were just lying in these file cabinets. We'd take out the ones that we were working on, and then we'd sit down at a desk and carefully examine every square millimeter of the scroll, because there's some things that you can see on the scroll, or maybe even as you flip the fragment around a little bit, you can see writing that flips over the edge that simply is not visible by photographs. So it was standard for people who were working on the first editions of these scrolls to not only work with the infrared photographs that were quite easily available, but also to go to Jerusalem and handle the fragments, turn them upside down, inside out, sometimes shine lights through them so that we could get the best possible reading, all the possible information from each fragment that we were publishing.
I imagine this is kind of ultimate jigsaw puzzle kind of things. Or were they already arranged in at least a semblance of where they belonged had the scroll been intact?
By the time I got to work on the scroll fragments, some initial organization had already taken place. Professor Frank Moore Cross was one of the first people who worked with the scrolls, and he gained a worldwide reputation for being able to recognize the different styles of handwriting on the different fragments, and then from a jumble of fragments, picking out those fragments that had the same handwriting and putting them together in groups. And later on, scholars would come through and say, all right, we think that this same scribe was probably writing the same document. Now, can we find where in the document these fragments fit? So I had the great joy of being able to find many locations for very small fragments by carefully examining what letters came before and after what letters and which lines had readings just above or below other lines. And in that way, was able to identify many of these fragments and put them in their proper place after they had originally been simply separated as belonging to the same manuscript.
How much of the text of what we know as the Old Testament in Hebrew is included in the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, we have representative fragments from each of the books in our Old Testament, except for a total of three that we would count as separate books. We don't have anything from First Chronicles or from Ezra or from Esther. But of those three books that we count as separate books, two of those, the Chronicles and the Ezra, are counted by the Jews as one of a pair. So First Chronicles goes with Second Chronicles, Ezra goes with Nehemiah, and we do have something from the other one of those pairs. So sometimes you'll hear people say we have everything except Esther. But it all depends on how you count the books. So portions, at least, of each of these books are preserved. But of the books that are preserved, we don't have everything in those books because so much was lost over the thousands of years that they've been in the caves. In the Book of Numbers, which is relatively well preserved, we have just a little under 10% of all the words in the Book of Numbers that are still preserved, that haven't simply become dust and blown away.
Why were they in the caves to begin with?
Well, it's quite likely that they were deposited there by the people who lived at Qumran when they saw that the Romans were coming through and destroying the entire nation. That's when the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. So part of that, as that battle was raging, these people who lived far out in the wilderness had a very precious treasure in their books, and they apparently gathered up all the books that they had and put them in caves that weren't very far away from the settlement, but were in such places that would be difficult for the Romans to discover and destroy. Most likely they wanted to come back and pick these things up after the battle had finished, but we think that they were all killed in the battle, so nobody was there to come and retrieve their treasure.
Doesn't the discovery of these scrolls and representative fragments of virtually the entire Old Testament, Hebrew Old Testament, doesn't it lay to rest a lot of previous speculation from liberal Bible scholars that the Old Testament canon in particular, that is the group of books known as the Old Testament, weren't really recognized or didn't come together as a unit until much, 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 much later?
Well, that question has been notoriously difficult to pin down, because when you say that the canon came together, we might be thinking by those words that these books were all published in one book, like we would open our Old Testament. But they didn't make books like that back then. The way they made their books was by having each separate book on its own roll. So you wouldn't have a book of the Old Testament, but you'd have a book of Isaiah, a book of Jeremiah, a book of Ezra and Nehemiah, and they could be in the same area, but how do we know that they were all, as you say, joined together in a canon? That's where the scholars have been kind of fighting it out these last few years. How can we determine which of the many books they had preserved in close proximity were actually considered to be the authoritative word of God for that believing community?
Are we talking here about documents that, at least in terms of their antiquity, date to the time of Christ?
Many of them date to the time of Christ. The one that I worked with most extensively, the Book of Numbers from Cave 4, was probably 30 to 50 years old when Jesus was born. So it's even older than Christ. And the oldest documents that we have from Qumran come from about 250 B.C. That's a lot older than Christ's birth. Some of the documents, many of the documents come from the lifetime of Jesus, who probably died, in around 30 A.D. The latest documents that we have are from 68 A.D., when the Romans came through as part of that war in which they destroyed the temple. So yes, many of these documents come from the time of Christ or even before the time of Christ.
Is there, among all these fragments and parts of scrolls, is there something that is much better preserved? Is there a book or a section that if you walked in, you could see pretty much a couple feet of a really, truly intact ancient scroll of the Old Testament text?
Yes, the best example of that is the book of Isaiah. The entire book of Isaiah is preserved on one scroll. I'm not sure if you know about this, but we're having a big exhibit of the Dead Sea Scrolls here in Milwaukee starting at the end of January. And they will have on display a replica of that scroll simply to show people what entire scrolls would look like. It's so valuable, they wouldn't ever have the entire scroll on display outside of the nation of Israel. But that scroll shows what a scroll would look like. Most of the other scrolls, like I said before, are fragmentary. Maybe some are well enough preserved to have, say, four or five columns together. But it's much more natural to have fragments that are smaller than a modern page.
What would you say to someone who says, look, I got my Bible. I don't care about the Dead Sea Scrolls?
You know, I can understand that. There are times when it seems like all of this extra discovery and scholarship is talking about things that don't really matter because we already have our Bible. But our faith is based on historical reality. So it really does make a difference for us. We don't simply have a religion that is a philosophy, what some person thought in the abstract would be a good way of thinking. But we have a God who became man at a certain time in history, so it makes a big deal of difference to us whether he was a physical human being at the time our religion says he was. And the written documents that we use to support that are the historical documents that we call the Bible. So each of these historical artifacts that are preserved offer one more element of proof that we're dealing with a reality rather than somebody's good thoughts about who God is and how we must be saved.
Finally, then, with about 30 seconds, what do you think is at stake in the battle between Jordan and Israel over the ownership of the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, first of all, I don't think Jordan has any chance of prevailing in the public opinion, world's public opinion, that they are the owners of these things. They were simply taking care of a certain territory of the Palestinians at the time when the scrolls were discovered, and so they had some oversight. But I don't think that constitutes any sort of moral ownership rights. And the nation of Israel has taken these scrolls to heart as founding documents. They were discovered right when the nation was becoming a nation. They've taken care of them. They've been making sure that these are published. So I think that what's happening now must be more of a publicity ploy than a real live effort to get scrolls all under Jordanian oversight.
Dr. Nathan Jastrom is professor and chairman of the Department of Theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He published as part of his scholarly work the first edition of the Book of Numbers from the Dead Sea Scrolls. You can read something that he has written about the Dead Sea Scrolls at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jastrom, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
When we come back, Harold Camping of Family Radio fame, he is kind of a pioneer in televangelism, or we should say radio evangelism. Rather large following, at least in his radio audience. Actually an engineer by trade, by training, has done what engineers do. He's done some math. And actually for the second time, the first time he got his math a little wrong, he says, for the second time he has predicted that Christ will return. This prediction, May 21st, 2011. We'll talk about how he thinks he figured it out and is it a fool's errand to try and set the date. Pastor Brent McGuire of Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Dallas will be our guest. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you believe many universities censor free speech based on the content of that speech, you'd be right. The faculty of the University of Massachusetts invited a terror bomber who served 18 years in federal prison to give a speech. The university said it was necessary to respect academic freedom. Compare this with Sacramento City College. It's going after Steve Machias, the student body president, because he didn't censor a pro-life display on campus showing pictures of aborted babies. Members of the faculty wanted them booted off campus, but Steve refused, citing First Amendment rights. Now, college officials are retaliating by trying to get him thrown out as student body president. Sadly, it's not at all unusual for a pro-life or otherwise moral stand to be censored by academia.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.